Together with American Songwriter, we had the chance to talk to Jenny Cotterill of the band Bad Cop, Bad Cop.
Adam was able to talk to Jenny on the phone. Check out their new record, The Ride.
Make sure to check out our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Bringing Back Pod.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Jenny of Bad Cop, Bad Cop.
Hi, Adam. It's Jenny.
Hi, Jenny. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you so much for doing this. Our podcast is about your journey in the music industry and starting or being in Bad Cop, Bad Cop and getting signed to Fat Records and how that all kind of came together for you.
Cool.
I did read that you are from Southern California. That's where I grew up as well and I live. What part of Southern California are you from?
Well, I live in Huntington Beach, but I'm actually from Michigan.
Oh, wow.
But like the band is from Southern California. So like,
well, tell me about
girls live in.
Tell me about growing up in Michigan.
Oh, I mean, it was pretty, suburban, and kind of not that exciting. And that's why I wanted to leave. So, yeah. And then I just kind of didn't know anything when I decided to try to leave and knew a person that lived in San Diego and was like, all right, I'm going to come and move in with you and figure it out. And then like right before I was going to move, she moved to Orange County and knowing nothing, she didn't know anything either, but she was like, it's kind of like the same thing. Like it's a lot like San Diego. Just it'll be fine. Meet me there. You know what I mean? So, and then I actually, out of complete ignorance, ended up here for more than half my life. but coming from like a place where like you had to drive really far and kind of seek out resources for music and art. And then everything is just so, it's just a really kind of rich ecosystem for those two interests of mine. You know, sometimes I fantasize about moving somewhere else, but then it's like, yeah, but I've got like three hardware stores and a bunch of garden centers and like the best art supply store in the world and the best fabric store. Like, where would I go?
Right.
Back to a place where, you know what I mean? I got to go to Joann's Fabrics and it takes 20 minutes. Like, so, yeah.
Well, tell me how'd you get into music originally?
Well, as a young, confused person, I was, found this guitar, this like toy guitar and was like, oh, sick, I have a guitar now. And so I was like trying to learn that. And then a friend of mine from school, I was like in seventh or eighth grade or something. I told her about it because I knew she could play and she's like, I'll bring my guitar over. I'll show you some things. And she came over and she's like, Jenny, this is not a real guitar. Like, so I didn't even know that. You know what I mean? Like my family's not particularly musical. But so then after that and a very supportive discussion with my wonderful parents, like I later got like a regular acoustic guitar and kind of went from there. And just like, you know, it's nice to have a creative outlet at all times, especially during like adolescence and puberty and all that ridiculous stuff. But I didn't have a band until I moved out here. I didn't know anybody, obviously. And then I met these folks who are in a band called Introspect, which funnily enough, they have had like a lot of turnover, not because of anything bad, but I think just because there's like a mastermind member named Dave Small who kind of writes everything. And then, you know, you can sort of change people in and out. But that was a really important support system and creative outlet for me and like, you know, playing real shows. And, you know, I wasn't even playing guitar in that band. I was playing keyboards. But it was just really nice to like get involved and make some friends and remember that I M musical. And then I kind of got pretty busy with going to school. And then towards the end of my educational journey, my best friend and I found this like toy organ at a swap meet, and I was like, you gotta come over. You gotta see this thing. It's so cool. And she came over. She's like very an early adopter of internet cultures, and set up a YouTube channel for us covering a Cox Bar song went viral. Yeah, so we were Cox Bar, which like the internet was up in arms. This is like before people knew that you shouldn't just shit on women all the time. So sure. That was like interesting. Yeah, so it's funny because that was like about 10 years ago, and like to see where we've come in 10 years has been really nice. Yeah. Like people that the feature where you can like share a memory kind of has been interesting on like Facebook platforms, because like people will share a memory and they'll be like, oh great, remember this, and like it's like a repost of one of our videos, and like if you read what the original post was, it was them being like, this is why women suck and I don't like women in bands.
Oh wow.
In the span of 10 years they've like mentally erased that memory and like, you know, come to respect us as people and individuals and like make space for women, which is like, I can't say that we haven't made some progress, you know, not that everybody's there, but it's just like, yeah, I have some hard proof of things getting better on that front.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So I actually met the girls in Bad Cop. I met the founder of our band, who's a woman named Jen Carlson,
mm-hmm.
And Stacey D, the other guitar player, playing in Cunts Bar. They had another band called The City, and we were both in sort of smaller female projects, and you get kind of, at the time, you would like end up on shows all together because people are like, oh, you know, women. Put them together, which I like sometimes, but then sometimes it's like a ghettoization, and I don't mean that term to be insensitive to like anybody, but like just kind of putting everyone together that you think of as other, or imagining things in common based on just being women. So that's kind of like a fine line to walk, but I did meet a lot of women in dance, so it's like surprising to me talking to people that are like, yeah, I don't really know any other, you know, women bands, or it's like, wow, it's crazy, like it's like my entire network of people. So so Jen invited me to a band practice, the second Bad Cop band practice, which was she and Stacey had met Myra the drummer at a party in San Francisco couple weeks earlier, found out that they both lived down in LA. And it was like a really good first date. We just hit it off and wrote a bunch of songs, and everybody was excited to, you know, play with people that were like bringing a lot to the table immediately, which is like any group project, you know, I mean, usually there's like one or maybe two people that do a lot of the work, and then everybody else is just kind of like, okay, whatever. But we were firing on many cylinders, and it was really fun, and just been going since then. Jen left the band after about a year, but she also introduced us to Lynn, who is our bass player. So it's like she's still the mother of this band.
That's cool. Yeah, because you have three of you sing. So do all three of you write your own songs? Like the songs that you sing, do you write, and the songs that Stacey sings, does she write, or would you write a song and say, you know what, I think Lynn's voice would work on this better than mine, or vice versa?
It's mostly like the songwriting. Whoever sings the most on the song probably wrote it, but during production and like all that stuff, there's definitely a lot of like, okay, what would make this better with like our, you know, the ingredients that we have. And like, for example, we do all help each other with everyone's songs. And like everybody has a very distinct singing voice, which is kind of fun to like know where you can get in on somebody else's song, like breaking down harmonies, and it's like, well, you know, Lynn does the best Oz, and I can sing really high, and if anybody's going to yell on this, it's going to be Stacey. Like, so it's just very, like, you know what I mean? It's kind of, like, it's nice. You have the ability to, like, go beyond your own kind of spectrum when you're working with people that are different than you.
Sure. Yeah, you all have a unique lane that you're in. You can kind of layer that within each other. You know, like, right? Yeah, like you said, you know, if it's going to be aggressive, it's probably Stacy, or if it's higher up, it's you, or, you know, how it kind of goes. That's cool that you're able to all collaborate that way instead of, like, I've got this song and this is how it's going to be. And then they come and say, oh, I have a song and we're going to play it this way.
Yeah, I admire the, like, kind of complete control type of bands where there is one kind of mastermind and then everybody else just kind of does all of the things that this person has orchestrated on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But our band is totally not like that. It's very democratic and, like, you know, I'm having trouble with this. Can you help me? Like, you know, like I might have a really good sense of melody, but I have a hard time maybe with, like, song structure and, like, transitions, and, like, having Stacey and Lynn to help me with that just makes my work better. And the times that I have been like, no, I'm going to do it on my own, it's like, well, that work kind of suffers from your egotism, you know?
Sure. Like,
it could have been better if you had asked for help. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Lesson learned.
So you moved to LA. You meet the women in your band, and then what was the what happened from there? Did you guys just try to start meeting people and booking, like, local shows in, like, LA area, or did you guys go to the studio?
We didn't get into the studio for a while, actually. Jen and Stacey had been, like, musical partners in a few bands up in San Francisco for about 10 years before that. Being like, that's like a good position, and they were good bands. They were pretty active, like they toured and everything. So, like,
oh, wow.
Those personal contacts allowed us to tour, like, the West Coast pretty easily and, like, without any kind of an agent or anything like that. And then, you know, Cusper was active and touring, like, you know, regionally. So, like, we had those resources, you know, and Myra has been in bands for 20 years in the South Bay area. So she just, it was like everybody kind of contributed to, like, well, there's this venue, or my friend's booking here, or there's this new bar here, or maybe we should do this. And if you guys want to go on tour, if we call this person, then we can put together a tour. And so it was definitely, like, self-driven. And then as those four of us, we tried to record in that first year, and, like, it was like, you know, you're a good band, you know, you have that feeling. And then, like, we got into the studio with this guy and the product was, like, so embarrassing. It was like a very unflattering photograph, you know what I mean? Where you're like, oh my God, you know, what am I doing here? Like, what, am I crazy? I thought we were a good band. So we were just kind of shook up by that. And then, I was working at Hurley, the surf company, in the art department. And my friend, Daisy Warsoff, was, like, he was running a recording studio at Hurley. And, you know, we were just talking. And he's like, you should bring your band in here. Let's do, like, a demo or whatever. And I was like, okay, sick. Because we have a terrible demo. And, like, everyone's embarrassed about it. No one wants to talk about it. No one wants to fucking record again because it was so disappointing. You know, so it was like we were shook, you know. So came in, Davey's like very professional, and like he was doing that for, I don't know, it might have been 8 or 10 years over at Hurley, just like doing, like, recording, like, No Effects and Dave House, and then also, like, the kids that work in the store's fucking band, and, like, you know what I mean, like, just kind of, like, very inclusive.
Sure.
It was a beautiful model that, you know, that is gone. Hurley is, like, very stripped down. They've been bought and sold a couple of times, and, like, Bob Hurley's vision is, like, not a part of this anymore. But he really believed in, like, community engagement and, like, art and culture, and, like, you know, I wouldn't have a job there based on what's going on there now either. So Anyway, so we got in and he was just like, do you mind if I have some like production notes? And it's like, of course we don't mind. You know, you have a lot of experience. What do you think, dude? You know, so he was like, I think you might want to focus on maybe like repeating a couple choruses and kind of stepping into the fact that you have multiple people with nice voices and maybe get a little more melodic with it. And, you know, so we did this demo with him that we put out by ourselves that we're still really proud of. It's not a demo, it's just it's an EP. Mm-hmm. And then we did, a few years later, we did Boss Lady, which was my first release on Fat with him. And then luckily we, Fat Mike came to a show that we were doing like right after we had finished that and was like, I love it. Do you have anything that you are ready to put out? I was like, yeah, we do. We just finished this thing. We have no money. And like, nobody wants to talk about the fact that like, what do we do with this thing that's like pretty good, but we can't, you know. So we sent it to him, and then like a couple of days later, Stacey called me crying, and she said, "Mike wants to put out a star record." I was so excited. Oh my god, what?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so crazy.
That is crazy. So the first thing you released on Fat was Boss Lady. So did he hear the Bad Cop, just like that EP, the self-titled EP you guys put out?
I mean, we gave him one. He came to a show, so he I don't know if he ever listened to it, but he did enjoy the show. And then he had asked us to like send him what we had just recorded, you know, and I was like, okay. So emailed it. And then I guess he was into it. So there was like, that's kind of the cool thing about like the way they do a lot of things with like, you know, starting out with a band is like, you know, just try it out with an EP or, you know, what do you have? And then like everything that we've done with them since then, you know, he's been increasingly more involved in and invested in. And that's been really a cool journey to work with him and work on this stuff together.
Yeah, because, well, he's really involved in the new record, right? Didn't he produce
Definitely.
It? Yeah. So,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
I want to get, we'll talk about that record for sure. I just want to kind of go in order here. So like so Boss Lady was the recorded piece of music the project that you guys had that he heard and then ended up wanting to put out. Is that the recording that you had just finished? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So then you get signed to Fat Records, which obviously would be insane. And then what was the first thing that happened from there? Did they put you on like a tour with some of their bands? Like, what'd you guys do next?
No, actually, we were still kind of on our own generator there. We went to Europe, which is cool because like once that was announced that we were on the label, then this guy, Glenn, reached out and was like, hey, you want to come to Europe and do a tour? And we were like, oh, okay. yeah, whatever. Okay. So, we did that. And then, you know, we just kept kind of booking our own stuff and doing the best that we could. And then there's a really healthy, I guess pop punk. I think that term sounds limiting unless you're like participating in it, but like, you know, a pretty healthy, accessible scene kind of where we live, you know, regionally. So we were doing that and, I don't think we got too far past. I don't even know if we got into like Texas on that. You know what I mean? We just kind of moved from the West Coast in a couple states. And then we did Not Sorry, which is our first full length. Mm-hmm. And Mike he did produce a bit with us, but it was like he was so fast. I mean, we were there for like a day at his house and then it was like go back and make these changes. And then after that, I think we got invited we did a tour. Mm-hmm. We got an agent, Ramona at Atomic Music Group, and that was helpful, but also, like, you know, there's not a lot she could do because we were still, like, the same band, you know, so, and she's trying to book us places where we've never been, and that's a lot of, like, I don't know, we'll see, here's no money, come show me why I should pay you more. yeah, and then after that, we did most of the Fat tour, the Fat, like, 25 years anniversary tour, but in the first kind of half of our life as a band, Stacey was dealing with like a very serious and debilitating addiction to like Xanax. And it was gnarly, and it's like sort of hard to remember what it was like because she is so much different now, which is great. But it was definitely, we had a lot of like kind of problems and struggles sort of associated with that. And then we ended up having to leave that tour, which was like such a bummer because it was the biggest, most exciting thing we have like had the chance to do at the time. And, but I think because it was such a bummer and so, public and humiliating, we were able to, we went into like a detox treatment center. You know what I mean? That was rock bottom. You have to kind of get there sometimes in order to be like, oh God, what am I doing? So, since then she's been like just up and up every day, it seems like, and every year has been, you know, she's like working on like mental health and meditation and gets involved in like, you know, she helped with the founding of the Sidewalk Project. And so like, you know, that's like, once you start actually caring about other people, that's like a really, like a higher level of wellness. You know, you got to get yourself well first, but then like once you're able to be like, okay, I am sustainable, I can now turn my efforts towards helping other people. It's like a good indicator, you know?
Yes, for sure.
And, yeah, just written amazing songs. And she, what was crazy is like through all of this, through all of like her addiction, she still was so talented. You know what I mean? It was almost, yeah. I felt like we had this like severed head that we would like trot out and like put on stage and it would like scream from like the center of the earth and like make all this, you know, I mean, you can't argue with that. Mm-hmm. And yet it's like now that she is like very healthy and very like, she's into self-care and like knows what that means and like is actively seeking connection and positivity and like, you know, empowering herself and others, like she's just, it's crazy. She's like a little rocket right now. So
yeah. And was that between, did that happen, like getting off that tour and stuff, was that after the second record it came out, or was that in between Not Sorry and the Warriors album?
I'm pretty sure it was right after Not Sorry came out. That was our first full length.
Okay.
I think it would have been that summer that it came out, because it was like, oh my God, what? We're going to do this? You know what I mean? So actually, like, I wasn't that happy with my job, and I was like, all right, I'm just going to freelance and quit my job. We're going to be busy touring. Like, also, P.S., anytime I quit my job because I think we're going to be busy touring, something happens. that happened again this year. But just a heads up, think that's a good idea. Be prepared for the universe to have a different idea.
Yeah.
But
oh man.
maybe I rocked the song out twice. I don't know. Maybe it's me. So we had like a few months of like recovery, and then we went to the fest out in Florida. That was like the first thing we did when we came back from detox and regrouping and stuff like that. And that was great. You know, it was like, that's just such a fun festival, and everybody just like brings a good vibe. And it's like, you know, it's not like it's pretty accessible. It's not like the festivals where it's like just massive bands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you can only hope to watch this from, you know, Gen Pop, which is like 20,000 people. Like it's, you know, small venues. Mm-hmm. You know, bigger bands on the same shows with smaller bands, and just very cool. So, and then we got kind of like a generous offer to tour Snuff.
With who?
That,
I'm sorry.
Snuff. This is they were a band. They are a band on Fat, but they like were very busy. Probably 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's Duncan Redmond, who's like the guy who, it's his band. He's in the Toy Dolls. He's like a
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, a singing drummer, you know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
One of those guys. So some of those guys were friends of Stacey's from a long time ago when she was living in the UK with her ex-husband, and reached out about, like, hey, we're going to do this tour. We want you to come with us. And we were like, wow, thank you so much. We still have, like, a really bad reputation. It's really nice to be invited to come do this really cool tour with, like, such a great band. And that was, like, they are adults and they're very professional, but they're also very funny and fun. And, like, you know, there's, like, zero toxic masculinity in that touring package, like, really just a good, kind of like an apprenticeship, you know what I mean? Like, come on tour with these people who know what they're doing, who know how to laugh about things and not take things too seriously. And so that was, like, really nice. And then it sort of helped us get into, like, regular touring and kind of shake off this reputation. But unfortunately, the whole incident was, like, crystallized somehow. No one will explain to me who or when this happened, but in our band bio posted on, like, the record label's website, I called a few people a couple times to see, like, I noticed that our band bio is just about us fucking up. And that was just one moment. I wondered if, like, we could go through, like, a process of appeal. Like, you know?
Yeah.
And just got a lot of pushback. So I don't know if it was, like, maybe it was, like, a punitive thing where it was, like, you bitches humiliated us and yourselves, and you're going to have this be your fucking Wikipedia page for the next, you know, I don't know. So finally changed, which is cool. We did our time, you know?
Yeah. Was that kind of, was it nerve wracking to play that the first show back, like, at the fest and stuff, or did you feel pretty embraced by the scene?
It was, once we were there, first of all, like, even a bad show has, like, a certain amount of adrenaline that, like, is, like, positive. But it was a great show and people really came out. That's, like, the other cool thing about fest is, like, it's not people that are, like, I'm here so that somebody takes my picture in a flower crown and tags me in it. You know, and you're like, they're there because they really love. Yeah. And it's like, it's just like a good vibe, you know? So we were nervous. The actual kind of mechanics of the coming apart were very painful. And so everybody was kind of bruised as, like, a family from that. And you know, unfortunately, like, there had to be, like, a rebuilding of trust, which, as anybody knows, is not something that you can be like, okay, on the count of three we're going to agree to feel safe together again, you know? Like,
sure.
It was like that was, like, I'm so glad that that's completely behind us, but it, looking back, it was definitely, like, tender, you know, for a good reason. Like, you just, when people are not in their right mind, like, you kind of, you can't hold them fully accountable for their actions, which I don't think a lot of people like to hear, because some people have kind of a bloodthirsty attitude, you know what I mean? And then it's like, we get into, like, prosecuting mentally ill people, you know what I mean? It's like, if you're not capable of making this right-minded decision, and maybe are you not super accountable for what you have done in that state? Like, I don't know. The cool thing is, like, a lot of, like, the really painful things, Stacey doesn't even remember doing them, which is, like, on the one hand, it's like, well, for my bruises' sake, that hurts my feelings. Like, I wish you remembered so that I could be mad at you. But then it's like, why do I want to be mad at you? Like, that wasn't you, and you would never do that now. And so it's like, I don't know. So yeah, that first show, it wasn't even a tour. It was like, we drove across the country and fucking got up on stage and played first on one day in Ninja Turtle costumes because it was fucking Halloween and somebody told us that everybody wears costumes at that. And they don't. We were, like, the only people.
Just you guys. Like,
yeah. I was like, okay, this is, all right, roll with it. fine. Kind of classic for my life, but, yeah, it was good. And then it was like, you know, seeing how many people came out to see us and didn't care that we had this, like, embarrassment. Mm-hmm.
But, like, from there, like, do you feel like all of that, you know, that reputation, all that came with that, spilled in or into the, you know, the production of Warriors? Or was it kind of, was it hard to sit in the studio and write that record because of everything that had happened?
No. And actually we had like a few years between everything that happened and, you know, years of touring and like kind of putting it to rest because it had been processed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few songs on Warriors about Stacey's recovery that she wrote that I think are really poignant and cool. Like Broken is kind of about it's directly about her experience getting sober and like taking accountability and like looking at what she's doing and, you know, instead of saying like, well, I have anxiety and depression and these things happen to me and therefore like it's okay for me to have this addiction because I've had these problems, you know, just like looking at it and calling it out and deciding not to be broken anymore or to see herself that way, is when she got to change and got to be a very powerful person who is fully turned on and here to help, you know. And one of my favorite things about her is like, she is not afraid to say like, I don't know what's going on. Will someone please tell me, like, I'm here to try and help. Like, for example, with like, the very rightful outrage and uprising of people about Breonna Taylor and, George Floyd, like, you know, we're all trying to keep abreast of like what is happening. And there is like, sometimes people are like scared to say something stupid so they don't get involved. But like Stacey is very much the other way. You know what I mean? She's like, yeah. Okay, I said the wrong thing, but like I'm trying here and I'll try to say the right thing next time. And tell me what I did wrong and I'll look at what I did wrong. And, you know, so I just really admire that about her. She's very, very brave and here to help. And,
yeah. She takes risks. And yeah, a lot of people, right, especially in the current climate, are just kind of afraid to say anything about anything just because how they could be construed or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, nobody wants to get yelled at either. That's like, I totally get that, you know?
Yeah, totally.
This is not the same scenario, but I would sometimes be frustrated in like my feminist ideals and like endeavors like to see people like shaming people for not already being like totally up to date on like the dialogue. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's kind of like, okay, some people are new to this and you shouldn't be mad at them for coming to the table and you shouldn't, you know, shout them out and make them feel stupid because that doesn't help your cause, you know? Like, so I get that, you know. But again, it's like, this is just, I think, a mix of like, you've got to like be a little bit tough and be humble and just bring yourself to the table in any of these conversations and like listen for a minute. And then when you're ready to talk, you can talk. Or if you have questions, ask them. Like, you know, it's all okay. Everybody's learning. Nobody knows everything already. So,
sure.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you.
Yeah. So I guess a lot of Warriors was about Stacey's recovery. More of Warriors, I think, was a reaction to the Trump election.
Oh, okay.
So we were on tour for 2 months, like 1 month before the election and 1 month after, you know what I mean? So it was like right just saddling this dramatic event. And it was all over the U.S. So it was like we're seeing the whole country and what it really looks like and what people are really thinking and feeling and doing. And it was like a lot. I'm glad I was with my friends and my band family to like process that together, because I can't even imagine being home and figuring that out alone and what that would have felt like. But it did motivate us all to kind of reconsider what we were going to contribute to this record that we had been working on, you know, kind of previously. And then it was like, well, what's important? Sorry, there's some sirens.
It's okay.
But, you know, so I think reconsidering what we were going to do and reconsidering like the shots that we were going to fire, not use like a violent analogy, but like, you know what I mean? Like, if right, we, let's totally. Say we get 12 songs, 10 songs or whatever it is. It's like,
yeah,
you don't really want any of them to be meaningless when like this just very, it seems like there's important things to be said. So I'm grateful for the timing of things as much as I can be. We were all a little complacent under the Obama administration. You know, things are going to be fine. I trust this guy, you know. It's like, so, yeah, so that just kind of changed things for us. And then we were torn on that album for, I guess, now almost 3 years.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Wow. And that brings us to the current record, which guys are releasing, what, in a couple of weeks now? Next Friday?
Friday,
yeah. Yeah. How exciting.
Oh, my God. It's so exciting. Plus, because it took so long. We took so long making it, you know, because we were working so closely with Mike, and he's got 1,900 things going on, and touring, and we were touring, and it was like, you know, busy people.
Yeah. Well, tell me about the process of The Ride. I want to hear all about the album.
Well, it was, we started doing some demos about in January of 2018, which is crazy.
Wow.
Especially considering like the kind of gestation period for a punk rock record is, mm-hmm. I don't know, like a week in the studio is a luxury, you know? So yeah. Everybody we've talked to is like, no, we got in and got out. And it's like, oh my God, that's not how we did this. So that was, but it was like, we did want to make a different record. You know, we kind of felt like we wanted to maybe develop the songs a little bit further and maybe get a little bit farther away from like that kind of punk rock epicenter. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but I think we can all agree that like 180 beats per minute and like 2 minute songs, it's like just the kind of the tropes of that are kind of limiting. And like also, I'm not really into like a pop structure, which is funny because I know that most of the songs that I have gotten through on our albums are so poppy, like I wouldn't listen to them myself. So I feel like I finally got a chance to be like, I want to write some weird shit, you know,
and
like, I want you to let me track it. Okay. So, that happened. My dream came true.
That's awesome.
And yeah, it was like, and it was just really, it was really cool working with, we worked with Johnny Carey from Old Man Markley. He was like our Jiminy Cricket through this whole thing. I mean, we were at Johnny's house like every week, you know, just trying new things. And he's so, he is like a really wonderful incubator for any kind of musical idea. Like he just has so much, knowledge and is very open-minded, you know, and he works so closely with Mike that he's like, okay, Mike's going to want this. So let's do that. Let's also try this just in case, you know what I mean? And it was like, fucking cool. Thank you, Johnny. You know?
Yeah. He kind of knows how Mike thinks and what he would want it to sound like. Yeah, that's rad. That probably helps quite a bit.
It does. And I'm so in love with his wife, Annie, also in Old Man Markley. And they have like every kind of cute rescue dog. It was a lot of fun, you know. And he had some sleepovers and brought our dogs and really like kind of gave up on the idea that this was going to be quick and easy. But I feel like quick and easy yields like kind of cheaper results, and that's not what we wanted. So I feel like we're very satisfied and happy and proud of what we got out of this. You know, we put a lot into it, and I think we got what we wanted out of it, which is so cool and kind of rare.
Yeah. And you've released what, just the one song, right, from the new record? Or have you, or put out two? Simple Girl is the
I
one
think, yeah.
I've heard Simple Girl.
Yeah, which I can't believe she wrote such a cool song.
That's a great song.
This is the coolest song. Thank you for writing this, you know? Like, wow, I get to play that? Awesome, you know? So, and then we also released a song called Pursuit of Liberty that Lynn wrote.
Okay.
Yeah, so Lynn's got two songs that are kind of centered on immigration reform and politics on this record. She's been very outspoken about what is happening to people trying to come to this country and like the hyper criminalization and demonization of that. And I'm really grateful for her articulating those ideas in ways that are like badass and powerful. And like, you know, again, like, thank you for writing this. And I get to play this awesome stuff with you. And her parents were Vietnamese refugees in the 70s. And I think that experience and history really like made the whole topic of immigration especially sensitive for her. I mean, it's outrageous to all of us, but I think coming from a person who has some authority on the topic is better than if, like, say, I wrote it, or it's like, I don't know, my Italian and German immigrants from like 100 years ago. Like, what the fuck do I have to say about this? Besides, like,
yeah,
I don't think this is right. Yeah. I have no position of authority on this. I have experienced lots of privilege, you know. So it's like, yeah. So,
well,
yeah, and then I think we're gonna have another single out on Friday, but I'm not totally sure what it is. There's still some debate. But I mean, the whole album comes out on Friday anyway. So.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So the whole record comes out Friday, but you might have like another single.
Yeah. Well, so videos are tricky right now, obviously.
Sure.
I think the whole model of like what you do when you have a new record has been like upended. I was just talking to the guys in Make War, and they have this album that came out in like November. And like they have just really not been able to support it in the way that it deserves to be supported. And like, you know, so they're just like, I guess we're going to start writing the next one, you know, because what are we going to do? Show up and tour on this album a year later, which like, yes, you should. But at the same time, like, I think that they're right to know that like, this is maybe the chance to move forward and try to get that, like catch that wave the way that they deserve to, you know? So, touring is it's non-existent, and then a lot of what agents and venues are doing is like just kind of keeping what was scheduled for this year and being like, okay, we're gonna do this exact thing next year, same time, same venues, if they're still open.
Oh. You know,
which is like hard to swallow, because it's like, really, we have to wait a whole year? Like, but at the same time, it sort of protects the people that did have plans this year. I don't know how this affects anybody that's a new band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are you going to get in when everybody's like scrambling to rebook things? But
right. Yeah. How are those newer artists or bands that didn't have anything booked yet, but want to play, are ready to play now? There's
right.
Not going to be anywhere to go. But at least it kind of makes sense, as if you guys were supposed to be playing LA tonight, at least you know June 14th of next year we'll be playing whatever.
Right? I know. Yeah, your call will be processed in the order that it was received.
Right, exactly.
It's like, so it's fair, but it's like not great, you know. So
sure.
How
do you feel about putting out the record during quarantine? Did you guys even consider not or waiting?
We did, and we decided that people are home and deserve something good. And you know, one of the things when you're a band and you have a new album and you play live is like, even if people love your band, they don't necessarily want to come to a show and not know any of the songs that you're playing. So we just kind of thought about like, maybe what's good about this is that when we do get to play again, people will know these new songs, which we all agree are better than any of the other songs you've written before. and we can kind of start there with everybody if they have time to get familiar, and they maybe, if you really like the band, have something to look forward to. You know, also I think part of our reason to say, yeah, go ahead and release it when we were going to, is like, it's so much longer than we thought it would to make the record, that it's like the idea of waiting any longer was like intolerable to us.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, wait, then we started this in 2018 and it's going to be 2021. Like, just get this out. So, yeah. But
I wonder if you'll have a lot more material to record after COVID as well. Are you writing at all?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I said earlier that I quit my job because we were going to be touring all year. And it was like, I can't do this. Like, it was just, I was at a point where they were like, what do you mean you're going to be gone like 8 months of this year?
Yeah, I am.
So maybe I'll just teach someone how to do my job and we'll call it a day. But that just gives me a lot of time that I had really fantasized about for years, because we've been busy and I was always trying to do a million things, and like dreaming of some vacation that I was never going to take, where somehow I have my dog and my guitar and all my art supplies. And it's like, well, you're not going to have that money or time or opportunity, but like, here it is in a way, like all those things that you wanted to spend time with are here at home with you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I have been writing, and also like a lot of my writing comes from like, it's like a cathartic process for, confusing feelings or like, you know, big moods, and there's been a lot of those things right now, which is like, okay, I will take this and I will spin this straw into gold, and we will have a bunch of songs whenever we're ready to like record again, you know.
So, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I did notice too that you've been doing a lot of those like live stream things and stuff. Do you enjoy that?
Yeah, I do. I know there's like, I don't love, there does seem to be a really, I guess, just the sound quality is very compromised. But at the same time, I think it's like, I always kind of support doing something rather than nothing, you know, stopping short of oversaturating things. But, yeah, it just, you know, I have a computer and my guitar is at home and I can do that stuff from here. So if you, yeah, sure, let's do it. You know, we did have like a band meeting where it was like, okay, we're doing too many of these things. Nobody's watching them after a certain point, you know, and if you're not performing a different set, like, why would you keep doing it the same thing? It's not like you're playing a show where like you did one show in Arizona and then you go to Texas and you play the same set. It's like everybody from everywhere can see you repeating yourself, which
sure.
is not, you know, just
yeah.
not entertaining after a certain point. So that's kind of another reason to dial it back on that stuff.
Yeah. What about when the record comes out? Do you think you guys will play some of the songs off the new album?
Yeah, I do. We're still sort of searching for the right way to make use of these streaming shows mm-hmm. and like the right platform. And you know, I've noticed like the best ones that I've seen involve like people with like pretty legit studios or at least editing capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Just so it's like the sound is more authentic. And,
yeah, I've talked to people. They just there's. It's pretty much impossible to just do the song live if you guys went on like Zoom or whatever because of the like latency and stuff. Like there would be no way you could be in time.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it might have been Pup had like a very hilarious kind of addressing of this situation.
Oh, where they were did. Like, all out of.
They did like a live stream of a band practice, and it's like a video of everyone in different places and like nothing lining up. You know?
Yeah. Like, that's awesome. Yeah, Pup did that? Oh, yeah. I need to look that up. That's so funny. Pup,
yeah. If it's not Pup, it's Pears. You know what I mean? One of the two greatest tea bands of all time.
Sure.
But, yeah.
That's cool. I'm going to check that out. That's awesome. Well, I want to talk to you a little bit too about you do a lot of baking from what I see online. And that just been a hobby of yours?
It's like a lifelong hobby and interest of mine. And then after I quit working at Hurley, and then we went on tour and I came home and I was like, I would just love to clock in and get some money somewhere. A friend of mine was baking at this really cute candy shop. And she was like, hey, I'm swamped and you're an artist. And do you think you could come and decorate cookies? And I was like, yeah, I would love to. That sounds really fun. You know, so I started kind of really ultra part-time over there just doing cookies, and she was doing everything else. And then she left. She had like a family kind of crisis emergency and ended up quitting. So it was like, all right, you're up. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to fulfill these orders and, you know, learn how to make giant cakes now because somebody already paid for it and they're coming on Thursday. So, So it was like, I was like trying to honor like the businesses recipes and expectations, but also my like insecurity about that sort of caused me to lean really heavily on my like art skills. So then it became kind of changed what they offered entirely. And then like that became what we did. And that was what we were known for, was like these sort of sculptural, very illustrated, very like funny, cute kind of fantasy things. But it was like, because I don't know how to make bananas Foster and I don't actually know the science of any baking. Like, I could bake a cake, but what I can do is like cut it up cute and cover it in cool stuff. And
I mean, I'm looking at the cookies and stuff you made on your website. Like, wow, they're so detailed. Like, they're so good.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, so I'm like a mixed media illustrator, which like weirdly, it doesn't get you a lot of work as an illustrator, but it really translates well to food. People usually want something like a character or like some type of message on it, or like they have a theme going on, and then just using food as the medium is like really fun. I always like those like cake shows, you know. Dude, one day I want to do that, and then it happened. So and then that's the job I left in February. But it's okay. I've been doing some stuff on my own, and then also doing some like auction stuff to raise money for different charities to support Black people.
Nice.
And yeah, that was cool because it's like when all you can think to do is like give money or like share things, but you don't have money. It's nice to have been able to kind of turn that around where it's like, okay, I don't have that thing, but I have this other thing, and maybe we can work together. And kind of an artist trick.
Yeah, sure.
Generally, artists don't have a lot of financial resources.
Well, it was interesting. You said that you know you're an illustrator, but you're not really getting work doing illustrations. But I did see that you did like pretty much you did the NoFX cover right to their book, The Hepatitis Bathtub and Other Stories. That artwork is so rad, and the book itself is amazing. But that's so cool that you were able to do that. Did Fat Mike just know that you're artistic and ask you to draw that?
I think that the reason I got that job was Jeff Belewis, who was working on the book with NoFX is a friend of mine, and I did a mural like at his house, and we've consulted about various art projects. I feel like most of my time goes to like having weird phone calls with random people about like, hey, I want to do this, but I don't know how. And it's like, okay, well, try this. Or have you considered doing it this way? Like a art project consultant. But I think that it was that relationship that got me that job, which was, I'm so grateful for that. You know, that was like, that's the only illustration job I've ever had where I got paid again. You know what I mean? Because it was like, once it was published in another language, I got like a little
publisher. That's cool.
You know what I mean? I was like, oh my God. So cool. Thank you. Like,
yeah. But to have your art on like the Bible of everything that happened with NoFX is pretty crazy.
I know. That was like very cool. And I think I also kind of feel like, obviously I'm like flattered that I was asked to do that. And I also feel like, you know, pretty qualified. Like, yeah, I know about this stuff. And I also, you know, Jeff really wanted it to look like a little golden book. And I am like a huge fan of mid-century children's illustration. And like, so I was like, oh yeah, I'm your guy. Like once he called, he was like, do you think you could do this? And I was like, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I could definitely do that. I love that you want it to be that way, you know? So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, that was really fun.
And then I did notice on your website too, not to go off topic, but you have like, you know, paintings of, you know, pet portraits and stuff. Are those things that you'll do for people if they like contact you and say, hey, I want you to paint a picture of my dog or whatever?
Yes, definitely. A lot of commissions, like, just, you know what I mean? That's like, I'm not an artist who is like, has like a reputation with any type of gallery where like whatever I do, people would be like, oh, we want it because you did it, or we like your style or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, so, but I do feel fully capable of like, whatever it is that you want made, I could make that for you. So, and then like, you know, a commission is like, you're guaranteed to get paid. Whereas like, if I were to be a gallery artist, you know, let's say I spend 8 weeks and thousands of dollars making something that I believe to be great work. And then, you know, maybe two pieces sell. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a very high risk model.
Sure. Because you can waste so much time and money and energy into something that might not sell.
Yeah. I mean, worst case, you made a bunch of art, but at the same time, like finding the time and resources to do that is kind of hard to come across.
Sure.
So,
I just thought that was interesting because I'd love to chat with you about doing a painting of my dog outside of this.
Oh, I would love to paint your dog. Yeah.
Okay. We'll talk
Let's
after.
Do it. Okay.
Cool. Yeah. I want to ask real quick, and I don't know if you even feel comfortable answering this, and we could cut it if not, but I'm curious about, with the current climate and your guys' band name, are you seeing any sort of backlash towards you guys at all? Or are people like out of nowhere reaching out and saying like, your band name is awful? Like, you know what I mean? Kind of like, is there more attention drawn on you now?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And, yes, it has been interesting. We got obviously like a lot of commentary from people who are feeling, empowered at the moment, which is funny because, you know, it's easy to say whatever terrible thing you want from your phone or computer, and make whatever threat you are feeling up to. So that would definitely increase. And then our Instagram has been hijacked. Like, it is out of our hands right now. It was like reported several times as like abusive and spam and all this stuff. And then, we can't get into it. It's like locked.
I know. I did notice that. I tried to go on it, and it doesn't go anywhere. And I was like, oh, maybe they just. And I wondered if you guys just deactivated it for the current, you know, because people are, just aren't really posting right now. And then, but then, now that makes more sense.
No, yeah, we didn't deactivate it, but like, so that is, that was, you know, an unfortunate byproduct of what's going on. And then I think also I've noticed a really major uptick in, to use a term that's loaded right now, but like internet policing, you know what I mean? Where people just tell other people how they should be conducting their business online and what they should be saying and what they're doing wrong. And so of course that was like a, you got a huge wave of like, you know, people just sharing their opinions. Which is always like unpleasant.
Yeah.
But, it's like, I don't know. And then I also don't know, like, we, you know, we've had a conversation the other day about like this might, we might have to change something. Like, I don't want to, because I feel like, you know, maybe at the inception of this band, it didn't seem like a particularly political statement. But in the 10 years since, it is something that I personally stand behind. And that's my opinion. It's not necessarily everyone else in the band. But I do believe that the police system is not one of civic service. And the idea that police exist to protect people is a myth. and I just think, you know, maybe to protect certain people and property does kind of seem to be what they're about. And, you know, I think other times in my life, I have kind of swung back and forth as far as like how outspoken I want to be about my own political beliefs because of various reasons. And I don't like polarizing things, and I don't like causing reasons for people to put up fences between themselves and other people. And I think a lot of times a difference of opinion is a reason enough for people to dehumanize another person. So I don't believe in that, but like my personal beliefs are that like, yeah, that system is broken and was broken from the start and really needs to be re-examined. And I am disgusted to look at the numbers of like the budget breakdowns for cities. You know what I mean? Like, I just can't believe, like, 45% is the lowest percentage I have seen in any of these reports. And it's, like, over 50 in many, many, many cities, which is, like, if you had your own household budget and, like, it was, like, somebody was, like, okay, so 15% is going to go to groceries, 35% is going to go to rent, 10% is going to go to gas. 5% recreation and the rest goes to guns. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
What?
Security.
how many guns do you need? You know what I mean? Like, what, I think we should plant a garden and maybe fix a roof. Like, you know, it's like, I just, how we got to that point is mind blowing. I knew about the, like, you know, the US national budget and the military spending, and I was already like, pretty pissed off and disgusted by that, because it's like, I'm sorry, but like, shouldn't we put some of that money back into kindergarten? You know, like, or you know, getting people off the street? Like, so I've learned a lot in a couple weeks, you know, which is uncomfortable because it's not stuff that I like hearing, but it's also, it's important to learn it and look at it, because otherwise, you know, it's like having a giant tumor growing and refusing to look at it or get it scanned. You know, like you have to do something about this if you don't want it to like consume you and ruin everything.
Yeah. That's crazy that you guys have been taking so much heat for what's going on. I guess, I mean, yeah, I'm sure you would have never thought of that 10 years ago.
No.
Like you said, when you guys thought of the band.
my God. 10 years ago, it was like revolutionary that we were all women, you know, like that was like, hold up. These bitches are activated. They're feminazis. And it's like, oh my God, all we are is women, you know, like it's like, and then it was like, you know, that was eye opening, but I already told you about 10 years ago and being a lady in a band and what that was like, you know? So it's like, I look forward to the next 10 years when this conversation is not so hopefully like outrageous for people, you know? Like, I just can't imagine anybody looking at those budgets and being like, yeah, sounds about right. 55%, you know, like,
yeah.
What the fuck are you spending it on? Like just a bunch of weapons, like,
yeah,
or who, shredders for police knows? Records, like, you know, I don't know. But I'll shred them for you. Not, you know, like, right. So crazy. So.
Well, Jenny, thank you so much for your time. You've been great. And I love hearing about the story of your band. I've been a fan for a while. As I'm a fan of pretty much every band on Fat Records, but, I think it's awesome and I really appreciate your time. I have one more question for you. I want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
I would say, feed that, you know, whatever you put into something is not wasted. You know, I think sometimes there's a tendency when you're getting started with anything to succumb to being frustrated or feeling despair about whether or not it's paying off. That's in air quotes, PS. but it's like, you should, I mean, first of all, I guess I think creative expression is an end in itself. You know, like anybody that's doing that and has unlocked that kind of secret power in themselves ought to be proud of that. And that is like such a really powerful and important like survival mechanism and, you know, a way to kind of process things and learn about yourself. And, you know, so I think I do meet a lot of fans and artists who are like angry about not receiving the recognition that they think that they should have. And I think if recognition is your reason for doing anything, you might be always disappointed. But I think, you know, everybody should try, and you should try things that you maybe don't fully believe you can do yet, because that's how you find out. You can do things, and that kind of like will make you feel better about yourself. And when you feel better about yourself, you'll be better to other people. And, you know, it's a way to save yourself and others, just by kind of taking care of yourself.